Hello, you're listening to the Tickler Podcast on packetof3.com. Today I'm joined by the second and the fourth squeeze bassist. Welcome, John Bentley. Hello.
Hello, David.
So how come you're back in squeeze then?
I got the calling again. I think they must have realised they could be even more successful if they got me back in the band again. Because obviously, when I was in the band before, that was the most successful period.
Well, you did play on the two out of the three best albums in what many people think is their golden period. So
I would agree with that.
So have you played together again yet?
No, we haven't.
There hasn't been a single note played in anger yet?
So. No, not at all.
Have you done anything together? Have you met yet? Or?
Well, I met up with Glenn about 9 months ago, when he was doing a gig in Penzance, and I just happened to be living there at the time. And he invited me to the gig, and I went along to see him play. And we had a bit of a reunion and swapped phone numbers, and then I heard from him, well, it must have been a couple of months ago now, asking me to rejoin the band. To which I replied, let me just think about that for a moment, please, Glenn. Oh, OK, I'll join.
So have you actually heard Simon or Stephen play?
No, I haven't, but I've been hearing good reports from other people that they've played with. People have phoned me up who've worked with them, getting good reports about their musicianship, so I'm looking forward to playing with them.
Yeah, Simon's great. I mean, he hits the drums about as hard as anyone I've ever seen.
Yeah, like the wild guy at the Muppets.
Well, Animal. Yeah.
That's it.
And Stephen's the most spectacular pianist. I think he's going to be told to tone it down hugely.
Is he?
Otherwise, he'll hog the limelight. He's as spectacular and flamboyant as you can get.
Oh, right. Okay. Does he stick knives in his keyboard? Set fire to them?
No, he does strange things with pineapples. So you'll have to wait and see.
I think I'll wait.
He'll introduce you to his pineapple. Hopefully, it won't be too painful for you. So going back, how did you meet Chris and Glenn in the first place? Back in what was it, 1980?
What 79? The original publicity story or the truth?
Well, the publicity story first.
Publicity story was that I was busking, wasn't it? You must have heard that a dozen times. Well, they saw me busking on the streets of London in the tube. And asked me to come down to audition for Squeeze on the strength of my busking. But that was actually not true.
Right.
The truth was that I just answered an advert out of the Melody Maker.
Right, okay. Well,
But it's a very interesting story if you want to hear it all.
What, the busking one? Or
No, the actual truth one.
Yeah,
I think,
please,
the truth is stranger than fiction.
Let the truth be told.
Well, due to some kind of mix-up over the telephone, when I went down to audition for Squeeze, they'd actually already auditioned 58 bass players, mm-hmm. and they'd actually chosen one.
Right.
And they were actually rehearsing with him for a radio show.
Yeah.
And I went in there and was sat in the control room with Chris Difford, and he said, oh, well, I'm sorry, you know, we've already chosen the bass player. But throughout my conversation with him, I think I endeared myself to him, and they arranged a special audition just for me.
Right.
Which I passed with flying colours.
So what did you have to play?
I think we did a blues, and I think we did an improvisation, which was the best thing that we did all day. But Chris didn't take part, he was just watching from the control room. But we did a very good improvisation, which I sort of led the way on.
Yeah.
I think that's clinched it for me, really.
No, that's great. Well, I first remember seeing you on Top of the Pops, performing Up the Junction, Call for Cats. And was it odd to actually be miming along to bass that you hadn't actually played on the records, because Harry Kikuli played on
I don't think it's any more odd than miming to anything, really. I mean, miming in itself is a bit peculiar, but it didn't bother me at the time at all, because I was just being carried along on a wave of success.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't feel peculiar at all.
So Argy Bargy was the first album you were involved in. And many people see it as
the actual first recordings, though. Mm-hmm. It was the first album. I think we did a couple of singles before then. The Christmas one, I think.
Christmas Day.
That was it. Christmas Day.
Going crazy on the B side.
Yeah, I think we sort of got banned from some TV show or something over that.
yeah, inappropriate behaviour,
something like
during
that.
Live TV,
something like that.
You'll never work in television again.
Yeah,
I think was the phrase used. So, what are your memories of actually recording Argy Bargy then?
I remember getting a nosebleed in the studio before we were recording Pulling Muscles from a Shell. Must have been the sort of nervous intensity of the occasion.
Yeah.
And I remember listening back to Pulling Muscles for a Shell on Gilson's Ghetto Blaster, and it just sounding like a hit record.
Yeah.
You know, and that was like, they put the rough mix up on the big speakers in the studio, and he just turned his Ghetto Blaster on and recorded it and then played it back. It just sounded great.
Yeah, that's great.
So we all thought, oh, that's a single, which it was.
Yeah, yeah. So was that your favourite track on the album now, or what's the one that you'd choose?
I think I'm Go-Go, is that on that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the good one as well. I like the bass line on I Think I'm Go-Go.
Yeah.
I remember sort of working on that at home quite a lot and being very pleased with the result when we recorded it.
Yeah, no, that's a great track. Mm. So what about touring the album? You obviously did a huge tour.
Yeah, so that would have been the first one of the first tours, I suppose. Now, the first tour would have been off, when I first joined the band, that would have been off the back of
the Cool for Cats
album and the first album.
Early 79.
Actually, I remember that more vividly because we went to Australia.
Mm.
The Argy Bargy album, I don't remember it as clearly as being any different from the previous tour particularly.
Yeah.
Nothing particularly stands out for that. But I more remember the first tour, really.
Yeah.
You know, when I first joined the band, because it would be my first trip to America and first time seeing the New York skyline and being very impressed with that. You know.
So
obviously, the second time it wasn't quite as impressive as the first.
No,
so
that's right.
The first one that stays in my memory.
Yeah, that's great. So, you went from the heights of Argy Bargy to East Side Story,
mm-hmm.
which is critically the most acclaimed album. How was that to work on?
That was quite intense, and I remember we were working with some very professional people. Elvis Costello produced it, and he was very clever person to work with in the studio, and you know, quite often change the key that you were playing in, so you'd have it fixed in your mind in one key, and then suddenly you'd say, right, we're changing the key to something quite peculiar, and you'd have to straight away play the whole song in a different key. So you know, you were under pressure, but I think that's the way that he liked to work, and it brought the best out in everybody.
Yeah,
you sort of have to move your game up. That's probably why it was such a good album, I think, in the end. Plus the fact that there were really good songs.
Yeah, I mean, Glenn's finally got round to releasing his demos of the East Side Story songs.
Yeah.
And I always remember you telling me that the most difficult thing about being in Squeeze was trying to make the album sound as good as Glenn's demos.
Yeah, I think that's probably true of a lot of people's demos. The things that you record in your kitchen have just got the right feel and the right mood. Trying to transfer that into a big plush studio is quite difficult at times, but we did it with East Side Story. I think we exceeded his demos there.
So what's your favourite track then?
On East Side Story, I really like Labelled With Love because it was a top 10 hit, and I enjoy playing that myself, and it's a nice easy song to sit and strum and play on the guitar. That's probably my favourite track, I would say.
And it's got a great bass line.
Well, it's got a very loud bass line. It's just a straight country and western bass line, really, isn't it? Very understated, but that's all it needed because it was such a good song. It's got a good feel on it, that track. Yeah. They're all good tracks on East Side Story, and I like them all. Messed Around, that's a good one, with the double bass.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the first times I'd ever... I turned up at the studio and there was a double bass there. I mean, I'd never played one before, but I managed to attack it. It was about twice as big as I was as well. But I like the feel of that track as well.
Yeah,
but they're all good tracks. It's difficult to sort of pick one out. the is it F Hole, the one that comes on the album before?
Yeah, that's right.
Labour with Love. That was quite an interesting story because Elvis, because they put the track down and then there was no bass line on it, and they sent me off into a little room, a little annex of the studio with a cassette player and my bass and the recording of the backing track, and I had to work a bass line out for it. So I came back after about 10 minutes and went, there you are, that's it, and I've done the bass line. And then I went away, and then I put the bass line down onto the master recording, and then I thought that was the end of it, and I thought that's what it would be when the record came out. But when the record came out, there was an orchestra on it, and I can't remember the guy whose orchestra it was. It's some bloke that does all the strings for Elton John and various pieces. Quite a well-known guy. You'll have to read the sleeve notes. But he basically just ripped off my entire bass line and taken all the credit for his orchestra arrangement, you know. And I remember saying to Elvis Costello, I said, well, he's just nicked my whole bass line. And yeah. I think he said something like, well, that's rock and roll, isn't it? You know. So I didn't get any credit for that string arrangement, which was mine, really.
So the bass line's missing completely.
They just wiped the bass line off, but they took the whole idea of it for the string arrangement. So I suppose once the strings were on, the bass became surplus to requirements. So, but I still like the track FL because it's I can hear my bass part.
Yeah.
You know,
even though it's
played
not
by an orchestra, you know.
Yeah.
So that's quite good.
The imaginary bass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you play air bass along to it then?
In my mind.
Well, I'll look for hopefully in the Universal Archives there's a copy of
the original
bass line.
Yeah, there must be.
To F Hole.
Yeah, there must be.
We can get a 6-minute-long version of it with the missing...
that would be great.
The missing verse with the original bass line. The origin of the orchestral arrangement rip-off.
Yeah.
Okay, that's great. So, after all the excitement of East Side Story, with the best album, the best band, best promotion, best producer, came Sweet Summer Stranger.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about recording that.
That was done at The Who's recording studio, which is probably the best thing about it, really, just sort of recording in the studio where they'd recorded My Generation and all this sort of stuff. Well, Tommy, I suppose, recorded there and all that sort of thing. So that was a good experience. Obviously, it wasn't to outshine East Side Story, but in fact that was the last album that we recorded before the group split up at that time. And I don't know whether it was because Glenn and Chris had written thousands of songs together and they'd just come to the end of the road, I suppose, really, by the time they'd done Sweets from a Stranger. So it was a bit of an anticlimax after all the acclaim of East Side Story, but it was still fun to record it, you know.
So what was the atmosphere like in the studio?
It was okay. It wasn't that brilliant, you know, but it was still good fun.
Mm.
You know, I haven't got any bad memories of it at all, you know. There's still some good tracks.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. So, yeah, no regrets recording that at all.
No.
It isn't one of my most played albums. But, you know, something's got to be the best and something's got to be not the best.
Yeah.
You can't have the highs without the lows.
No, that's true. So, what track stands out to you then? What do you remember most about recording it?
I've returned. I think that was always a good live number as well.
Yeah,
I think so.
It still is now. I hope it'll be the first song that you play when you come on stage at Gilfest in the summer. But perhaps Glenn will change the lyrics to "We've Returned."
Perhaps he will.
That'd be a good thing to do, wouldn't it? So, so tell me about your origins. What sort of music you were listening to when you were growing up, and what got you into it?
Yeah, well, I suppose like everybody else who was born in the '50s, you know, by the time I was a teenager, the Beatles and the Stones were out, and I was listening to all the singles on the radio. So that was my first influences, I guess. And when I heard the Stones' early stuff, I didn't realise that, of course, a lot of the tracks that they were doing were written by people like Chuck Berry and Muddy Waters, because I just thought they were Rolling Stones tracks. But I've learnt since that all their origins were from blues stuff, so I've listened to a lot of that. And then by the time I was about 15, 16, I was quite getting into jazz for some reason. I used to listen to a lot of Roland Kirk and Serenade to a Cuckoo and all that sort of thing. That was a big influence on me. And, yeah.
So what was your first band then?
The very first band that I was in, they were called the Jelly Roll Blues Band, and we just used to do a load of cover versions of American blues, but then I sort of took over somewhat and we did a load of original material that I wrote based on the paintings of Salvador Dali, and we ended up like a sort of psychedelic group in about 1969 and had these freak out gigs,
yeah.
You know, which were good fun at the time.
Yeah.
You know, the music was probably rubbish. I can't actually remember because, like they say, if you can remember the 60s, you weren't really there. So I can't actually remember what the music was like, but I'm sure it must have been okay at the time.
That's great. So what happened in the 70s? What sort of stuff were you playing then?
Well, I guess, yeah, sort of, I remember sort of getting into the punk thing, sort of mid-70s. Was it 76, 77? It was all happening, and I joined a band with a guy called Steve Parsons. He was known as Snips then. We had a little band together, and we had a few
Snips,
records out.
Snips and the Video Kings.
That's right. We made a few singles and an album. Did quite well, really. Did a tour with the Ramones, in actual fact, supporting the Ramones in the UK, and that was very exciting. And of course, I was quite into punk music, so the Ramones were almost one of the originals, I suppose, of punk. You know, fathers of punk or whatever.
Yeah, pretty much so.
So that was a memorable experience, hanging out with Joey and Johnny and the rest of the guys. Well, half of them are dead now, aren't they?
They are, yeah. Legendary.
Yeah. So that was great. That was great. You know, it was really good fun. And that was just prior to joining Squeeze in 1979.
Yeah.
But I was actually playing the guitar with the Video Kings.
So why the switch to bass?
I'll play anything to play with anybody. I mean, I'm known as a bass player, but I've played just as much guitar, more guitar on records in a way.
Mm.
Quite a lot of the stuff that I've done recently has been on guitar.
Yeah, so tell me about the stuff you've done recently, because you've got a new album coming out, a solo album.
Yeah.
Which is going to be available while Squeeze are doing the tour.
Yeah. Well, that's more keyboard oriented, so I've taught myself to play keyboard over the last 3 years. I bought a piano and just sat down and taught myself to play just by transferring my knowledge that I've already got of music to the piano, and plus getting a few lessons from friends of mine that I like the style of the playing.
So what's the album going to be called then?
It's going to be called The Man Who Never Was.
That's quite enigmatic, isn't
it? That's it, yeah. So I won't say any more about it, otherwise it'll be less mysterious, won't it?
Okay, so it's entirely instrumental, is that right?
Yes.
And you play almost everything?
I play everything, bar one track. There's a friend of mine playing a bit of nylon string guitar on one track. I play everything else myself. I would have preferred to have used lots of people on it, but it was just inconvenient. Nobody was there when I was recording it, so I just had to get on with it and do it.
Yeah.
So I did it.
Mm, yeah. That's great.
It took me about 6 months to record 10 tracks, but I'm very proud of it. I think, you know, it'll be well received, I hope.
Yeah, well, having heard it, it's sounds very stylish, very 60s, very cinematic. It's like some French movie or...
Yes, it's got influences, I suppose, from Ennio Morricone and various, I don't know, Miles Davis is in there somewhere. A bit of Joe Zawinul on the piano, hopefully, perhaps, you know, bits and bobs. I suppose there's a bit of a Kesha in there, if you've ever heard of Kesha. Yeah, a bit of hip-hop influence, but not in the drums so much, just the sort of feel of it.
Yeah. So what are your hopes for the future then? You've got Squeeze tours coming up this side of the Atlantic
I'm
and the other.
I'm living in the present. I haven't got any hopes for the future. I'm enjoying living in the present. Who knows what the future will hold.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, I'd like to have my own big band like Jules Holland, but I think I'd rather have an orchestra so sort of, I'd like to do my theme music with an orchestra.
Yeah.
That would be a sort of an ambition, perhaps one day.
Okay, so how many piece orchestra would you want?
A few hundred.
Someone on theremin as well? Or?
If you like, in fact, you could join in on theremin yourself.
I can wave my arms about and pretend it's a musical instrument while it goes.
I'm sure you could.
No, that sounds great. Well, good luck with the album. I look forward to hearing some more of The Man Who Never Was.
That's it.
You're playing some gigs
I am indeed. Well, I've got my own little band who are called The Id. For those of you who've heard of the expression, I think it was invented by Freud, the famous psychologist.
Mm-hmm. So the id and the ego and all of that.
It has something to do with the part of the brain that makes you dream.
So hopefully lots of people go along and see you play live.
Yes, they will do.
And big festival dates coming up. No rehearsals yet?
I've been given dates for rehearsals, but I haven't actually received a set list yet. But I presume that... I know sort of what songs, at least half of the songs will be in it.
Yeah.
But obviously I need to know what the rest are going to be.
Yeah.
They've got such a large catalogue, you can't learn them all.
No, it's 200 odd songs are there. And, there's only 30 or so that you actually recorded with them. So,
yeah.
A bit of time to get practicing there.
Yeah, well, I'll still keep practicing anyway. I can still remember how to play.
Oh, I'm sure you can. Yeah, well, that's great.
The fingers are still working, no arthritis as yet.
Well, it was interesting seeing the updated photos of the band.
Yeah, I haven't seen them myself yet.
All very, very smart in suits.
Yes.
Looking like
a squeeze turn up for work at Lloyd's.
One person did say that he looked like a load of bankers. At least, I think that's what they said.
Well, let's hope so. I haven't seen them yet, so it'd be very unfair for me to comment.
Okay, I'll let you have that.
Yes, hopefully they looks really good.
Yeah,
you know.
No, it's great to see you back again, John. Can I thank
my wig was on straight, was it?
I'm sure it's all your own hair. This is one bass player who does still have all his own hair. It's really good to speak to you, John. Thanks very much for coming along today. Thanks for doing the interview. Mm-hmm. Good luck with the tour. And the one thing I was going to ask you finally is, where's the secret show?
It's in your bathroom.
Is it indeed?
Yeah, because we've got such good acoustics in there.
Right, and an audience of one. There's only a seat for one person in the audience.
That's true, yeah, but it's the main throne in there.
Or will the drummer need to be sitting down?
Yeah, he could do, I suppose. I'm sure he could play standing up.
That's great. Thanks very much, John.
All right, David.
Okay. You've been listening to the Tickler Podcast on Packet of Three. Bye.